is Wednesday, my dudes.
Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Pull List. My name is Lex, and I'm here before the episode starts to let you know what's going on. So I was editing this really long episode and clearly didn't get it done. So when I was looking at some old audio files, I found a podcast episode that I thought I erased completely, and that's what you're getting today. Now, the next couple of episodes are going to be longer ones to finish out the year, and I'm really excited to put those out. I will have them done on time, I promise. And then we're going to go into the new year, and I'm really, really, really excited about some of the things that we have coming up. So if you want to know what we're listening to today, all you have to do is stick around. Welcome back, guys, and thanks for giving us a second to go to the bathroom. This is the section of the podcast where we review a trade, and some people call it a trade review.
Some people. You people.
This week on the show, I'm really excited about this book. I've been hearing good things about it. I love the creative team, and it just, from the covers, it just looked like my bag. And so I was really excited to check this out. We're reviewing
and secure the bag. You have to check it out and secure the bag.
We're reviewing Minor Threats. Simon, any thoughts from me recommending this and then seeing the covers?
So immediately when you recommended it, I was excited because I was listening to a last podcast on the left episode, and Patton Oswalt was on there, and he was talking about the book. And so I was pretty excited to look into it anyways. And then when you recommended it, I was, like I said, pretty excited to get into it.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I love Patton Oswalt. Patton Oswalt and Jordan Blum, they worked together on the Hulu show MODOK, and then they wrote a mini series for MODOK for Marvel. So they've worked together in the past. I really enjoyed most of the stuff that they've done. So I'm excited to dive into this and talk about it with you. Let's get into it. Minor Threats, issue number one, written by Patton Oswalt and Jordan Blum, art by Scott Hepburn. It's hard out there for a supervillain. Not the World Conquerors, Chaos Engines, or arch nemesis, but the little guy. The ones who put on uniforms, knock over jewelry stores, and get tied to poles. And things are about to get worse. The psychotic Stick Man has murdered Kid Dusk, sidekick to Twilight's premier crime fighter. The Insomniac's teammates are tearing Twilight apart, turning it into a police state desperate to capture Stickman and stop the Insomniac from crossing that final line, in which he may never come back from. Caught in the middle of the small-time C-list villains, finding it impossible to walk down the... Wait, what? Can't read, Gase, you know that. If it's more than two sentences, I get droned up. Caught in the middle are the small-time C-list villains, finding it impossible to walk down the street without being harassed by these heroes. With a bounty on Stickman's head, former villain Playtime decides to assemble a ragtag team of villains to take down the Stickman and kill him themselves. So, Minor Threats, issue number one. Let's talk about it. We're going to try to be a little bit more
succinct,
focused, and not try to spoil too much of the book for you guys so you guys can enjoy reading it without our influence, because we are comic book influencers.
Yeah.
But I'm going to talk about a few things that I liked, and we'll see what Simon thought about it. So, starting off, I really enjoyed the realistic portrayal of the life of these lower class supervillains. You know, the first issue focuses on Frankie, who was an ex-villain, recently ex-supervillain, trying to go straight, right? And it just talks about it just has this vibe of someone that's getting out of the prison system, trying to do right, trying to get back in their kids' lives, but with that lens of a supervillain, or that added, you know, part of being a supervillain on top of it. It just made it relatable. Not that I've been to prison and tried to work my way back into my family, but it just felt grounded somewhat and realistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was that extra layer. It was that extra layer of, like, you see that in movies all the time, because, of course, I haven't been to prison either, but where somebody's like, I'm trying to get a job. It's like, I would, but we don't hire ex-cons or whatever. Yeah. But it's that added layer of, like, we don't like, essentially, metahumans, or we can't have your kind, your whole deal around here. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I really dug that. It just really felt like in a world where we review books, and these Superman characters and these characters are in this book, but the big primetime heroes and villains, it's cool to see that there's also these guys are just trying to make it, man. You know, like,
yeah,
I'm not trying to take over the world. I'm trying to pay my bills. I'm trying to eat, you know? So that was really cool. Another thing that I liked is that it had different superhero tropes. So it wasn't just like villains versus heroes. It had all these different kind of like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It had like the superhero going bad, like one bad day, like the Batman is about to cross the line. But it also had, as I mentioned in the first point, the villain trying to do right. And then it also had like the team up of the supervillains trope. And then it also had the police state. And then it has to dealt with, you know, the ramifications of multiversal wars and kaijus and nobody cleaned up. It just had all these different things that could have been a singular story in their own right, kind of mashed into one. And I really like how seamless it seemed.
Yeah. Yeah. The kaiju thing was pretty funny. The fact that these heroes come in and save the day, quote unquote, but then they don't do any cleanup, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is always a problem, but in most books, it's like you have like, what is it? Something control.
Damage control in Marvel.
Yeah. So you have things like that in other books, but this one really showed it's like, no, probably not. Like these people, we don't have the resources for that. Yeah. So.
Especially because they're in like the slums. So they say the superheroes do come down here when they need to, but then they just leave because they think we're not worth it, which is kind of sad. But it added that layer of realness in a wacky superhero book because these characters are all wacky, which, you know, I loved. I loved all of these superheroes and supervillains. Anytime we get, and that's one of my last points, anytime we get away from the mainstream superheroes and we get to see these just a creator's take on a superhero, whether it's a classic superhero homage or whatever, it's cool to see what they do and what's in their head. Like their version of Superman was this, I don't even know, buff lady man.
That's like power girl or whatever.
I don't know the proper term. I don't know what. I think it was very ambiguous. Their Batman was the Insomniac, and it was very Batman-esque, but crazy. And it was just cool to see all these different takes on there, man.
Yeah. Yeah. As we get further in, I have some compliments on that, but I really like that part of it. We talk about being dropped in all the time, and this is one of those things. I love that you could, I don't know, kind of feel, well, I'll talk about that later, but one of the things that I really enjoyed about it is that the art had this like kind of a new school flair, but when you get to like flashbacks or anything like that, and I'll mention it again later, I'm sure, but the art follows that. So when she's talking at the very beginning about her past, like everything has kind of an old school coloring. It's a little washed out, a little different drawing style, very subtle differences. But then as you get closer to modern day, everything's a little grittier and grimier. I love little things that of the, like you said, the lived in world with like the villains that are wanting to something up on the wall, like their accomplishment that they want to put up on the wall of them knocking over a bank or, you know, something stupid. That was pretty great.
Yeah, and I love that.
And you know, this is the reason Spider-Man is so popular is because he has real world problems. Like he's a superhero, but he can't make it to class on time or he can't pay his bills or whatever. Yeah. And this whole book is that. And I really, really enjoyed, like you said, just people trying to eat, man. They're just trying to make it. And maybe they were indoctrinated into the villain system like our main character was. Maybe, you know, she actually had powers and she probably could have used them for good, but she started off young as being a villain. So that's just what she was.
Yeah, there was sort of a mystery behind that, too. So her, and this is later on, but they talk about how her mom was born regular person, but she had these gifts. And they talk about it being a family thing, but they don't ever go above. They don't ever talk about the family that precedes her mom. So I'm interested if they're going to talk more about that in the next. But yeah, just to round out the first issue, I just think it's so far, it's a well-constructed story, feels original, even though it has these various kind of superhero tropes. The realistic portrayal of these characters, it's not just wacky, zany, super villains, C-list super villains, but they all have sort of, as we learn, their own trauma. Like you said, maybe they're kind of put into this life against their own will, or just kind of happens that way. But the trauma feels really real with all these characters, and I really like that. And the artwork is solid. I'm in. This is my kind of, I really dig this kind of art.
Yeah. The artwork is so good, dude.
Yeah, it's
so nice.
All right, take it away with issue number two.
All right. Minor Threats number two. The Stickman has done the unthinkable and murdered Kid Dusk, the sidekick to Twilight City's premier crime-fighting vigilante, the Insomniac. While the Insomniac superhero teammates are tearing Twilight apart, turning it into a terrifying police state, hoping to find the Stickman before an unhinged Insomniac does, D-list blue-collar costume criminals have formed an uneasy alliance to hunt down and kill the Stickman themselves in a desperate attempt to end the chaos. So, yeah, I can just kind of talk about what I like about this. And so some of our characters kind of have, like you said, they are kind of tropes based on, you know, normal stuff, normal heroes that we see in both of the big guys. But one, I love the costume design that we see with them, and Brain Teases is probably one of my favorites. Like he's just got so much. He's like the Riddler with too much ego, but terrible. But one of the best, almost every single one of these books has like one page that's just a showstopper. And to me, Brain Tease is in his apartment while he's trying to map out what Stickman was doing or thinking or whatever, where he's got like the outlines, was immaculate. So good. And it's really just like a, you know, him sitting on his bed, but these like wide outlines that are kind of rough of the character moving around.
And to add to that, the book, I agree with you 100%. The book has, and even this issue has, so many moments that are great. Like when he's a flashback where he's dealing with his dad, and it's all of the inner monologue is in puzzle pieces. Like he's figuring out all these things with his dad, and they're all in puzzle pieces. I thought that was genius. I didn't even think about that until I was like going back through it.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about how his brain works with puzzles, and then all the inner monologue or puzzle pieces. And then that before, like right before he, or just even the page afterwards where he's breaking down what Stickman's doing, and it hones in on his face. It's like, this is, how long did this take this Scott to illustrate this? This would take me a year to illustrate these two pages. Blew me away. And I haven't seen, it's subtle, but extremely creative, man.
Yeah, it is really, really nice. And something that I was started to say before, sorry, I'm like so hungry. So my brain's not working very well.
I think that's my problem too.
Yeah, you can leave that in so everybody knows. But something I started to say on the first issue is that the world building is really just something else in this book in general. Like these characters don't feel like strangers. And it's probably has something to do with the fact that they are character tropes, but they really, I've just accepted. I've been reading this comic for years. This isn't new. Yeah. And the world feels very lived in, but it doesn't spend a lot of time in like monologues or anything like that. It's just, you just accept it, like the kaiju thing. And they mentioned that on last podcast on the left too, is that I was excited to read that part because they mentioned, but the fact that it's just there and that's it. They touched on it once and it's gone. There's another thing like that later in the book that it's just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Just roll with it.
It's, yeah, I agree. The pacing is really fast, but well done. And I don't want to seem, I want to try to seem as objective as possible, but I just don't know if I've seen it done this well, as far as this many characters in a new world. And maybe you're right. Maybe it is because they are sort of an homage to all these tropes that we are very familiar with, but they all have an individuality that they're not distinctly anyone, you know. But even Insomniac is Batman. I get it, right? And Kid Dusk is Robin. Yeah, they look like them and everything. But even him, even he's different than what a Batman would be. Whereas in DC and the DC universe, Batman is sort of this mysterious character that, as the fans of comic books put him at this pedestal where he's the greatest hero. But in the universe, he's like a shadowy figure that people don't even know if he's a real person or not. In this, they totally embrace that he is the world's greatest hero, even though he's just a dude. So it was just well conceived. And I think each one of these issues is narrated by a different member of the group, which I really loved that. It adds to like the exploration of the characters and dives into them personally. It's short, but it's impactful. You know what I mean? Because it talks about their childhood and their upbringing and sort of lets you in on their trauma. So you care more about this team.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, definitely. And that was something I was going to bring up later, that they focus on one character, but it never overstays its welcome. And it's still within the bounds of the story. So you're not getting just their thoughts on a subject. You might see a few inner monologue things, but then it's from their point of view, but it doesn't just show what they're thinking. I really like that.
Yeah. And there's only four issues, so they can't go through each member of the team, but a character like Snake Eater, is that his name?
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that.
The giant Snake Hulk man.
Yeah.
Snake right. Hulk. His story is sort of in the background. He is the catalyst for them starting to put everything together, right? He brings in his teammate, which you end up learning is someone that he fell in love with. And then you sort of get this very subtle, sweet backstory about this character in the background of the entire book, which is like, how do you even think to put that in there like that? Because it is impactful and it's subtle and it's just in the background.
Yeah, they do a great job with that.
It's good, man. It's good stuff.
The only thing that I would say on this issue, and it continues, like, so they go into this club and the snake guy is going to go into the pit or whatever. And while he's there, this guy gets just ripped in half. And to me, that was way out of place from what we've seen. I mean, I understand that some of these guys are big bads, but that just seemed crazy. It came out of left field. It's well drawn. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. It was just like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, it escalated. I mean, right before that, a guy gets hit in the head with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, but he looked all right. But the in that club scene, one of my favorite things is just seeing variations and weird things. This is what I like Wanted a lot. Like, this is why I like Top 10 a lot, is seeing all these weird variations of heroes in the background. And
yeah, like, same.
Automaton or whatever his name was really cool. The guy that's just a hand was really neat. Yeah, I loved all that. So that was, issue 2 continued strong. And I was excited to see what else they had.
Yeah, it was very cool to see the Death of Jason Todd homage, which is like him holding Robin's body, but it's Kid Dusk. I was like, yo, that's right off the page. And then that guy, I can't remember what that villain's name is, but his crazy, ridiculous gun looks so good. And they talk about, one last thing, they talk about wanting to, the superheroes don't want to lose their credibility. That's why they're just all over running this place like a police state. And I thought that was a good, that pretty solid commentary on what we consider heroism and violence. Like how in some people's eyes it's being heroic, but into other people's eyes, like the people of the streets in that instance, they see it like, holy crap, what are they? They're just beating the crap out of these dudes. They talk about the weather vane guy, and it's like, they destroyed his car. He loves his car. He's just like a regular villain. Why are you beating him senseless?
It was interesting. Her commentary on that, though, is that they're just trying to get him off the street so they won't get killed by Insomniac.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, that's what I thought was so interesting is that in one person's eyes, the heroes, they think they're doing a good job. But they're also beating the crap out of these people. You know, we're doing this for your own good. Listen to us. We're helping you. And it's like, all right, I guess I get it.
Yeah, that's like common, like, abuser mentality.
Exactly. And also, he goes into this club. Is he not crossing the line already? He's like chopping people's arms off and breaking people's necks and stuff.
Right. He cut that finger off that hand.
But I think he's crossing the line.
For sure. For sure. The ingenious way that Stickman is like aiming him is pretty cool too. I kind of like that.
Yeah. Stickman is, I would say, like the Joker, seems like.
Yeah,
kind of. It's interesting. It's very interesting. I love where it's going. And he is, he's using Insomniac as sort of like a tool, which is just, it's done so well, man. It's done so well. Let's move on. Let's move on. We could talk about it. I realize why we could just talk about a zillion things when we're reading these. That's why. Our episodes end up being so long. Minor Threats, issue number 3. Our group of D-list costume villains set out across the city to hunt down the lethal criminal mastermind, the Stick Man, and collect the lucrative bounty on his head. Hoping to find him at an upscale nightclub for supervillains, they instead encounter something more terrifying, the unhinged vigilante hero, Insomniac, out for revenge. That seems like issue number 2.
Yeah, I thought that's... Maybe we got mixed up. I thought that's what, I guess they just got to the nightclub in issue 2. I don't know. I can't remember now.
No, all that happens in the end of it ends with her falling off. This is just a weird synopsis because that's what the synopsis is. Let me double check. Yeah,
she gets hit by the bullet, right?
That's 3. Yeah, that's the weird synopsis because... And this next one, they go back to her mom's house.
Yeah. Right. And the surgeon lady's the focus.
Yeah, she talks about how her dad is kind of sad. All right, so issue number 3. I'm going to say, again, I hate to just continue with my same points for every issue. I think the storytelling and pacing are still done really well. I didn't expect them to be. I thought that it would be a drop-off. It's only 4 issues. It's really hard to pace 4 issues well. This issue is from the point of view of Scalpel, who has a tragic background, but she is a villain through and through, I believe. But not like a super villain, you know? She just wants to, she has expensive taste, and that's really her motive.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want to rule the city or anything like that.
It's kind of like Catwoman, in a way. Yeah.
Kinda.
That woman just likes to steal shit.
Yeah, like because she likes fancy stuff. Very interesting backstory with her. I really, really dug it. It might be my favorite one. You talk about scene stealing moments in the issue, and in this one, there is a scene where she is trying to help the main character, and it's the way she sees her body and is broken down. I was like, ow.
Yeah. Ow. Written in my notes, the x-ray page is immaculate.
How do you do that, man? How are you that creative?
Yeah, it's so cool. That's a poster for this book, I think.
Oh my gosh, it was so good. And we talked about the background thread of Snake Eater, whatever his name is. He used to be a henchman for Stickman, and so it adds to, I'm starting to get sort of crime noir tropes added into this, like who's betraying the team, who's the bad guy, you know. It's, they're starting to add that element in, which is like, how are you adding in more elements and how are you making it work? There's only 4 issues.
That being said, I thought that was kind of a weird jump in this. Not that he was a former henchman. I can accept that just fine. But for Scalpel to immediately jump to that he was betraying them, it's like, well, this he was a henchman way before this plan was put into motion. So what would, you know, why would he do that? Unless you're talking about from the very beginning when he brings in his fucked up friend. Like
he set it all up.
Yeah.
Which would be, he doesn't seem like that kind of character, but.
Well, I mean, Stickman is, could have set it all up, but even him, it seems a little bit far-fetched.
Yeah. And when we know that he's actually doing it for love, and his story, he kind of explains his story about how he was a henchman and he was full of hate. And then he found something that he loved that was beautiful. And he realized that hate wasn't the most important thing. And again, his subtle story in the background might be my favorite out of all of them.
Yeah. I like that a lot because I don't know if it's just love or the fact that he was homosexual was the hate he's referring to, but
yeah,
it makes sense to me that someone as crazy as the Stick Man would be like, no,
yeah,
I ain't cool with that. Or someone else, you know, whatever.
Even if he, and to add to that, I think Stickman is seems smart enough to use that against him. Like he may hate himself, have some self-hate going on, and Stickman is smart enough to be like, oh, I can use that for controlling tactics, like manipulation, use that against him. So very cool stuff. The artwork, as we mentioned, continues to be absolutely stunning. I don't even know what to say about it. I usually like to save it till the end, but I mean, it's not just the Scott Hepburn's illustrations. I think the coloring in this book adds so much more depth to it. Like you talked about earlier, the distinct difference between the past and the present. How do you do that? You know what I mean? Like, how do you do it so well?
Yeah. And really, all I had to say was I do love that every issue, because I wasn't sure if it was going to be that way in every issue until this one. I was like, okay. So I love that every issue is focusing on different villains, as you said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they go through this like wormhole thing later in the book. And I love that there's this, and we talked about this earlier with the kaiju, but I just love that there's this absurd with the real juxtaposition. Like there's just crazy shit out here existing next to like Ford Escorts. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just funny to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel so absurd that it's, to the people in the world, they're just like, yeah, there's just a weird street that we can't go down anymore because it's the time thing.
Yeah. And I love that in comparison to traditional superhero books that we read, because you'll have these big massive events. They talk about multiversal war in this. It's for just offhandedly, right? In the Marvel Universe, for example, every year they have a big event where it's superheroes fighting superheroes, then they team up to fight supervillains, and it destroys everything in New York. But then at the end of the issue, at the end of the thing, New York is sunshine, everything's great. We don't see damage control clean up. But in this, it's like, even if there was damage control, the place is devastated. Like it would take years to be back to normal. And this, they're just like, somebody got into it. Some rookie metahuman got into a fight with Chronopolis or whoever the time villain is. And it's just here. We don't know how to fix it. No one cares enough to bother with it because it's in the slums. So,
yeah. And I mean, it correlates with the real world. New Orleans is still fucked up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like out of sight, out of mind for some people.
Yeah, for some people.
I loved watching them go through that too. It was great because it's at one point it shows the paneling, like drawing the comic book.
Yeah.
Like the sketches. That was awesome. I was like, oh my God. How? Oh, what do I got to do to boost my creativity?
I also like that as she's chasing him through, at one point she's like Betty and Veronica, like she looks like an Archie comic or a BTS version of herself, which is cool. A Bruce Timm version. So I really like that. Overall, man, it's still pulling me in. I'm still enjoying it.
It's still good. It just, the character work in this book is probably it's probably for me the most important thing, the thing that grabs me the most. And to go in depth on so many characters enough. Like they don't spend, they it's paced and timed correctly. I would, if I can say correctly, well,
yeah,
you know, because they're not going into so much detail where it's taking up the whole issue, but it's just enough to get you to care about the characters.
Yeah, there were only a couple of things that I really, as far as characters, well, two. One, I think that Kid Dusk, that needs to be Robin's costume. I'm like, that was a great costume design. But the only other thing I don't like is that our main character, so I'm really into top 10, as you said, and she's way close to like the main character in that book, like almost exactly the same. So I don't know. But I still think her character is really cool. But I was like, ooh, man, that's really close to Toy Box. Like, that's what she does.
Yeah, anyway. It is. We get to see Stickman finally. Like, he's kind of just been in the background.
Yeah, his the way his, like, he goes into the Stickman, like, he just has a, he's skinned his head, but his face is round. And on his chin, he's got, like, a little line down that goes into his costume that looks like a Stickman. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Pretty terrifying. Simple and original, man.
Yeah.
Pretty much sums up this whole book.
Right. Yeah.
Definitely. All right. Close us out with issue number four.
Minor Threats number four, betrayed by one of their own and at the mercy of the maniac they set out to kill. The Minor Threats are sent on a suicide mission by the Stickman into their sanctum, into the inner sanctum of the Insomniac. See which of their cast of C-list costume criminals make it out alive. Hint, not a lot of them. As the most dangerous night of their lives comes to a nail-biting conclusion. Yeah, was that at the end of issue three? I don't remember where they get caught, but
they get caught at the end of issue three, and then the start of issue four, he starts monologuing and telling them what he's going to have them do next.
Yeah, it's insane. One of the things I really liked, and we've talked about this several times, but I think it's really noticeable here, is our main, or our, we're in the head of, what is it, Pigeon something?
Pigeon Pete.
Stool Pigeon? Pigeon Pete. We're in his head this time. And when he's first talking about the change from, like, you know, older comics.
Villains.
He's all fit and looking nice or whatever, and he goes and he finds, like, this horrific thing. And the art and the coloring and everything changes within those panels to reflect. Like, at first, it's all hunky-dory, golden age, goofy.
Flat colors.
Yeah, and he turns the corner, and this guy's, like, brain is exposed, and it's very modern.
Yeah, and the person that did that didn't even, like, Pigeon Pete's going to steal this Fabergé egg, but the person that got there before him didn't even care about the Fabergé egg. He just wanted to murder that person and show that they could do it. And so it's a complete shock to Pigeon Pete. And I agree, that is insane to take it from that old school classic comic book style to the more modern detailed stuff. I don't even know, man. Yeah. I feel like I needed to smoke a cigarette after reading that first page.
Yeah. I think this book has a lot of really good twists too, overall. Just the writing.
One of my complaints is that I knew that it was Pigeon Pete, and I don't want to, I guess that's a spoiler. Sorry. Maybe I'll take that out. I will take that out. I kind of saw the twist at the end. Like I in my head, I was playing, like, it seems too predictable, so maybe it's not going to be that. And then they solve it, and then they say that it's not that. And so I was like, oh, so it's like a double twist.
Right.
And that's kind of reading into it too much.
That's kind of what I meant, because, you know, in my mind, I was like, oh, no one betrayed. This is a mind game. This seems like a kind of thing that this character would do. But yeah, and when we find out that, yeah, maybe there is, then, okay, that's a lot of what a twist, you know?
Yeah, twist on twist on twist. I love the Dream Cavern. I loved it. They get teleported into what essentially is the Batcave. But Insomniac, keeping on theme with his brand, his lair is called the Dream Cavern. And it's just like the Batcave, except there's a giant bright crystal of some sort and right in the middle of it. It looks amazing, man.
Yeah, it's really great. Yeah, overall, just really awesome. Great design. Big aquarium, like right in the middle.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one of the things, there were a couple of things that I didn't like in this issue. I thought it was kind of crazy. They have this guy that kind of teleport. And Spider-Man. Yeah, I like that Stickman is, he's kind of crazy and he seems like a mastermind, but he does the silly thing. And like they make fun of an Austin Powers. It's like, go get a gun. We'll cap him right now. He's like, no, I'm going to close the door and leave him with one henchman and let him lower down into, you know, the sharks, the tuna. And it kind of feels like this, like he rigs him up with bombs and then sends him through this portal and he's just listening. There's no cameras or anything. And they play that out really well. But to me, what I find intriguing is like all these people just seem like regular people. Like Stickman is just a dude, you know, supposedly. And so I kind of see how he fights these people with a hammer. And he seems,
man, and only because in my head, in my infinite lockbox of created characters, I had written story or just an idea of writing a Thor book, but it being like a crazy man that used like a hammer like that.
Yeah. So he just seems a little bit too powerful. I don't know. They don't really explain anything about how he's trained, but he is doing like handstands and shit in his jail cell. So
that's why I said he reminds me of Joker, because the Joker is kind of the same way. They don't really ever explain Joker's combat training, but somehow he fights Batman.
I feel like the Joker just gets punched a lot, and every once in a while he'll pull out a bomb or something. Like, I think he can just take a punch.
Sometimes they have him like actually do like not drunken master fighting, but sort of that thing where he's like, he'll get punched a few times, but he knows what he's, it's weird how they make him a tactician, a Looney Tunes tactician.
Yeah. Well, or if it's like the Batman cartoon where he's like, everybody does karate and that. I didn't like that about that show. Yeah. So, you know, we do see Insomniac show up, and the choreography, one of the things I was going to bring up is I think that the choreography for those two fights between Stickman and the crew, and then the crew and Insomniac, I feel like those could have been reversed and it would have been more impactful. I see why they did it with, you know, I see why they did it with the car and everything and how that involves a certain character, but the way, it just seems a little more fitting to have the Insomniac choreography, like how all those scenes are played out could have been with Stickman, and it would have made a little bit more sense to me, I think.
Yeah.
Because he's the one that's like sending them there to do that.
Yeah. It definitely escalated super fast with Batman. I sure do love that high collar, man. I'm a sucker for a high collar.
It's very cool. But you don't like Power Man. It's so funny that you don't like that old school Power Man.
It's like his shirt, though. It's different.
Yeah, but
that's more of a popped collar.
They were both really cool overall, especially, and I say this, it would have made more sense to me for a crazy person to get their arm crushed and to do a flip onto somebody's back than for this guy. But maybe that's the thing. It's like they're both equally crazy. Just one is good and one is quote unquote bad.
Yeah. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier about this being the fans' version of Batman. He can do anything, you know, he can do, it doesn't matter. He can beat Superman. He can beat Goku. He's a god level character, even though he's a human rich dude. And that's kind of what I thought. It was like, what would Batman do if he got his arm shattered into dust? Oh, he would just do a backflip and then he would just figure it out, because that's what he does. And so I thought. It was just kind of like a ridiculous take on him always being able to win.
I can also see that. Like, I'm not hating on the way it was put together. I'm just saying that I could kind of see it the other way. And it might be more symbolic the other way too. Like I said, with the car, I don't know.
Yeah. That last page, the finale between our main character and Insomnia, thought it was silly because that gun, the recoil on that thing is huge. And she one arms it. And it has enough pressure to, you know, I was just like, not that it that is stupid. That's not a complaint. I was just like, could you imagine her arm would get freaking blown off?
Maybe it's got some kind of dampers on it.
It's gotta.
But it's gotta. It was
not that that matters. It just, it's an insane looking scene, man.
Yeah, it's cool overall. And I don't know. So what did you feel? How did you feel about how everything kind of buttons up at the end?
I thought it was fine. I love a good callback. Every time it happens, anytime it's like a good callback, I forgot about this. The mom asking for the gun at the beginning, like, if you want to do something for me, get my gun back. And it was, for me, that was just such a simple thing that you couldn't have added. It didn't add anything to the story. But for me, it was like, oh, that's a cool callback. Quick and simple. As far as her being sort of in it and working out a deal with the heroes, sure.
It makes a lot of sense to me. It's like an uneasy. It reminds me of the ending of the second Matrix, you know, or the third, or the Matrix trilogy. It's like you form an uneasy alliance and see where the chips fall.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of heroes too, you know, at this point.
And they also don't want to deal with the slums, you know, at all.
Yeah. So just let somebody else do it.
So they're not necessarily, our main character is not necessarily saying we're good guys now. They're just saying we'll take care of our own area.
Yeah, but what about the very, very end? That seemed...
The Captain America part?
Yeah. It seemed a little much to me. I don't know.
It seemed a little much, but I just like seeing that suit again. That suit is freaking badass. The Captain America suit.
Well, and I say that because it seems like a... like uneasy alliance, and then she's like, and then we're gonna spread a message like, don't come up in here, which seems,
I think it was
like,
also payback for the weather vane thing. It's like, hey man, we saw him mercilessly beat this guy just because he could, you know. It's like those, I'm not even gonna get political, but it's, you know, this guy was just in the streets just beating the crap out of people. They're supposed to be evacuating everyone or getting the villains off the streets, but he's just hospitalizing them. So, and you know, she doesn't necessarily pull the trigger, so we don't know.
And when you say that someone's going to be the message,
maybe
you kind of know that somebody's
maybe about to... We don't know until it comes back. I just, you know, to button this thing off, let's talk about overall. Overall, I just think, well, I'll let you go first.
Oh, I mean, you know, I said most of it during our little reviews, but overall, I really, really enjoyed it. I think that it's worth a read. It's something I'm excited about seeing where it goes. Or if it doesn't go anywhere, I think it's fine the way it is. I will say that I think that Insomniac was probably too close to Batman. Like, he was Batman minus ears. So that was, he was like so close to the same thing.
Added this thing. Yeah.
Even like as a kid, Dusk, that was a Robin suit. Like, I'm surprised it didn't have a red.
A better Robin.
But everybody else was fairly original, except maybe Power Girl. Not very original.
Yeah.
But that's really it. I mean, other than that, I thought it was really solid.
Yeah, I agree. I think Patton Oswalt, Jordan Blum, they've really put together this world that has these intriguing characters. Layered stories. The pacing is fast and well done. It left me wanting more, but like you said, I don't really need more. I was pretty satisfied with the ending. I haven't read a book that established this many complex characters this well in such in 4 issues. I just haven't. And I think that's what I'm kind of in awe about this book. And I don't want to oversell it. It might not be for everybody. I think it was the perfect storm for me. The art was amazing. I really loved the twist. I loved the world. And
for sure,
it was for me.
Yeah. And I would say my only real complaints that I just stated. I mean, other than, I would say the only other thing is like the gore was kind of crazy. You know, we didn't mention there was one part in the last book where our teleporter guy kind of has an accident, and that was a lot.
Teleporting Spidey got murked in a crazy way.
But, you know.
I agree. I think a lot of it was shock value, but not done in a way like The Boys or something. I think it helped break up the story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not overly gratuitous. It just seems a little out of place, but otherwise, I really, really enjoyed it, and I'm excited to see more. I'll say it again.
What are you saying, sir?
That's all right. Yelling at your kids.
Yeah, Jesus.
Abusing those kids. Gotta abuse them, man. Gotta smack them. Yeah. No, that's all. I was just, you can just cut the last thing we said.
Oh, well.
Anyway, so you ready to get, we grading? We still grading?
Yeah, let's grade this thing.
All right. So I'll just go first because I've got it. Rot chart.
And you know I gotta pull it up.
So, yeah, man, to me, this is right in the middle. It's the E4. I really think this is like one of the better books I've read. I really like these indie titles that just do their own thing. They're really intriguing to me because you can get all this background information that tell the story. You know, I'm not trying to figure out the history of a character. They just, it's right there. That's all you need.
Yeah. Everything you need, they give it to you. I'm going to have to go. We haven't agreed in a long time. Solidly agree. And I mean, usually we agree, but varying toast levels. But I got to go E4 too, man. I don't really have any complaints about this book at all. And again, I feel like I'm overselling it, but I just enjoyed it. I really did. Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. It's a good book. And some of the complaints that we said are just kind of like, It's so good that you have to find a reason.
Gotta
like
find something. Yeah.
So just to put our thumbprint on it right there. So
there is a spinoff book. I think it's done by Tim. It's going to come out by Tim Seeley, and Patton Oswalt and Jordan Bloom are working with him on it. It's called The Alternates. And this premise sounds pretty good. It's set in the same universe, but it's sort of like and I might get this wrong. I've offhandedly heard about this. It's sort of like an AA group or like a recovery group. These set of B-team superheroes, right, from the corny days, get stuck in, it's like a multiversal situation. They get stuck in a universe of grittier comics where they don't have their corny, silly powers. They're actually see their full potential, like how smart and how they can use their powers in these real world gritty situations, right? And then they get sent back to their regular world where they're sort of zany. And so, and they have all the memories of being stuck there. So they're trying to deal with the, they
withdrawal.
They kind of become addicted to the potential of themselves, right? That sounds like a good premise itself, but then parts of that grittier universe fall into our main universe in the form of a drug. And so it's like tempting them, and they have to deal with like trying to stay sober all while trying to solve the mystery of why it's happening.
Yeah.
So, that sounds pretty cool. Sounds pretty cool. Yeah. If the art's on point, I mean, it's going to probably be another banger, man.
Banger.
Yeah. And they do have more stories. Scott, or not Scott, Jordan Bloom and Patton Oswalt have said they have future plans for Minor Threats, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, even if they don't focus on our main characters again, there's a lot of space for this one. So,
oh my gosh, and they set up this world in such a way that they could honestly tell a ton of stories that aren't even necessarily connected.
Right, and they also didn't overstate anything, so you're not trapped in a box at all.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Yeah. Really cool. Really cool stuff. It reminds me, this is the last thing I'll say about it. You remember the Tick cartoon where Chairface was going to write his name in the moon?
Yeah.
But didn't finish it. And then for the rest of the show, that was just there.
Yeah.
And it was just part of that universe. And it just reminds me of that so much. And like, they just keep it in. I don't know why that specific part of the Tick reminded me of this, but it just kind of reminds me of that silliness.
Yeah, I love that kind of universe building.
Yeah.
Like that.
Me too. Sam, where can the people find you, man?
I'm Sime underscore on underscore toast on Instagram. Same on, what's that thing? TikTok. Almost said toy talk. On TikTok, I do photos and stuff. So if you are interested in that of toys, then come check it out.
Hell yeah. And we are Wednesday Poll everywhere else. If you enjoy the show, if you got any sort of laughs or enjoyment or recommendations from us, consider signing up for a Patreon. Just a few bucks a month. That's all we need. Yeah. We just need to pay the bills. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And on Patreon, you're going to find what we call the thick cut, which is long form reviews of each individual book like a series. So right now we're doing Exiles, and that's been pretty good. So
yeah, and you'll also get uncut episodes of this show if you're interested in that at all. It gets pretty lengthy. I have tried to edit, they get edited down like a lot, so if you're into that, you'll get to hear all of our, you know, so Simon says some, I'm the straight man, Simon can get pretty funny, but sometimes we can't share some of the funny because it's explicit. So,
well, yeah, I've gotten better.
So if you want to hear some of that, it's funny. So if you want to hear some of it, listen to those uncut episodes.
Yeah. 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 Also rate and review us if you can.
Yeah. Please. Do that. Do all the stuff, guys. We need you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll see you guys next time. We're circling the drain.
Whoosh. Bye.